Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are listening to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. Let's get faster. Welcome to Mist Apex iRacing Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy. As you'll see on my driver ID in iRacing, that's right. Got my branding all over iRacing now. So I can say, hey, look at me, and people can go, oh, what does Spanners mean? And I can say, oh, it's a nickname from my podcast and stuff. Isn't it cool? And they yell, nerd. But another nerd who uses a online nickname type thing is Scott Tuffy. You'll know him as Stuffy with seven Ys. Hello, Stuffy.
Evening, how's it going?
It's all right. It's going all right. My iRacing took a little bit of a dive towards the end of last week, but nothing compared to the dive in your iRacing activity.
Yeah. Obviously, for anyone who doesn't know, unfortunately, I caught COVID.
Yeah.
And so
licking handrails. That's your problem.
Yeah, that horrible thing that's been that's played around with the world.
First time.
Yeah. Well, first time that I know of. Unfortunately, yeah, caught it a little bit bad. To put me, knocked me for six. I did try and attempt to race. I got lured into a false sense of security. I felt really good on the Saturday.
Yep.
A friend of mine convinced me to do the 10 hours of Suzuka.
Oh, that's rough one to jump into first.
Yeah, he did really well after a couple of hours. And then I jumped in the car and I binned it after four laps, I think.
No. Was that because of you felt ill, do you think?
I'm going to say it's because I was ill.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
I'm
a good excuse.
I'm going to say it's because I was ill. I just ballsed it up, really.
Well, I guess you
which was really good about.
Didn't get your normal prep and practice. Did you just jump in?
I did like an hour the night before where I was feeling a bit rough, but I thought, you know what, I feel better than I was a few days before. And I didn't want to let my mate down either. I just let him down in a different way.
Yeah, you let him down in a different way. So I think a lot of us have gone through that kind of COVID-y thing where we're at home and normally it's like, well, if you're at home with no work, the rig's just there and it's quite frustrating to go, like you think about doing it and then your body just goes, oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, I have had to work from home and so I'm not that luxury on space, so I do have to dismantle my rig.
Do you?
Yeah, I mean, it's only in two parts because I've got a wheel stand and kind of like an add-on. So
what have you got? Have you got a race chair and then a wheel stand?
I've got the classic wheel stand, the Omega one. And then they've got like an add-on, like cockpit, which goes, which kind of slides in at the back. So yeah, I've just got I haven't even got a race chair. I've just DIY'd my my normal gaming chair and plonked it on there with a few screws.
Oh,
but it's removed that temptation. So I've been a good boy. I've been doing work, uni work and stuff. But it's been, in fairness, it's nice to have a little break every now and then as well.
So it's good to know that someone can be as capable as you with what you would actually call, it's a pretty, not quite entry level stand and setup, but it's one up from desk clamp, really, isn't it? That Omega stand. I've just Googled it and it's just, you know, something that your pedals can attach to. So at least that's firm and it's relatively stiff on the steering.
It is what I have come to notice, which a lot of people do like to point out to me and take the fun out of me when I'm streaming or recording, is that it wobbles about quite a bit. So there's not that extra stability of two poles or a rig that kind of holds the bars in place. There's too much force where I upgraded to the V2.5. The Club Sport one. There's just too much force that goes through the wheelbase.
Is that roughly equivalent to the TSPC?
No, it's a step up from
that. Is it a step up?
So it's above the CSL.
Oh, is it?
CSL. Yeah, it's the one above that. So, but because there's too much force, the thing wobbles about a bit. I'm losing a bit of the force feedback and I'm not getting the whole shebang, shall we say, of that wheelbase.
So where I was feeling that in the play seat, which probably, I'm sure, has more flex than that, is it's almost like if you do a quick turn or a quick movement, a lot of that initial force is actually taken up by compressing your stand to the maximum. And then you've got the, so you've kind of, it's almost like having play at the beginning of the movement.
Yeah. It's more of when obviously you're fighting the wheel, when you're stuck,
yeah,
trying to save the back end or something. That's where I'm losing a little bit of extra feel. So yeah, the next upgrade for me will be a more of a solid rig that I can get the full benefit of my gear.
Well, yeah, and you're already quick. And when I went to the 80-20 aluminium rig, I gained 1.2 seconds just like that overnight. But I'm not as good as you, so there was it gave me more tools. But I think even for, you know, good people like you, you'll probably see a big jump.
Yeah, because you're going to get the full benefit of the equipment. And as we know, as we've discussed plenty of times before, the equipment does make a big difference. So if you can extrapolate all that it has to offer, then all the better.
But would you recommend that? I'm looking that up now, the Amiga wheel stand. Would you recommend that to somebody who's got a desk clamp set up as a nice step up?
100%. Yeah. And then you've got the nice little added bonus of the add-on as well, of like a cockpit. So if you want to get... Plus, they also provide seats. I haven't got one of their seats, mainly because my missus was put her foot down and said, you're not having two chairs in this household.
One's enough. You're only allowed one chair in your whole household. Well, wait until you're an old dad and you've got your potting shed and you can spend 7 years turning it gradually into a studio and racing lab. We've got a question to start off with, actually. Let's start off with this question from EJ. He said, I remember Stuffy once said he only drove with the car's rear view mirrors for immersion purposes. I've done the same since, and I believe I've gotten better situational awareness. Does Stuffy find the same? Is he talking about getting rid of the big mirror at the top? Did you don't use the big kind of reverse camera?
Yes.
That would scare me.
I only use that in very rare circumstances. So I never use it in F3 or open wheel cars because I love the immersion. And I feel like the cockpit mirrors, there's enough going on about me, obviously with my headset as well, like the surround sounds. You've got enough. I feel like you've got enough going on around you without needing the virtual mirror in open cockpit cars. But when it comes to GT3 cars, it depends on what rear view mirror they've got, because they've got cameras. So the Lamborghini, as an example, has a real big, nice rear view camera. Whereas the Ferrari has this poxy little box that you can't see out of. So all you've got is the side mirrors, which are difficult to see out of at best of times. So, yeah, it kind of depends on the car. But open wheelers, 100%, I'll turn it off.
Ah, okay. What am I going to lose? Because I've just had that on as default from day one. In fact, for the longest time, I didn't have the rear view mirrors turned on because they were a big graphics sap. Whereas now I've got my system can handle that. I'm scared to turn it off. I don't trust those mirrors. Looking in the mirrors, it feels like everyone's going to lunge you all the time, every single corner. They're right there on top of you.
Yeah. As we know, with F3, sometimes it's not who's in front of you. It's who's behind you that you have to worry about.
But they seem too close is my problem. They seem too close.
No, so the virtual mirror is actually quite good for that. It's not like the other cars, as I said, with the rear view camera, sometimes they could be closer than they actually are or appear closer than they actually are. And the virtual mirror, it's actually proper same depth of how far behind you they are. But just try it. So I did it mainly for immersion purposes.
So it looks like you're using the real mirrors that you would really have
Yeah.
In a car. Ooh, okay, I'm going to give that a go. So if I wipe anyone out in our little swarm practice tonight, it's because of stuff he made me turn off my big virtual mirror. and that could, I guess, be counted as me using an assist to use that big virtual mirror.
That's the big one assist. Yeah, it's definitely an assist. Obviously, you've got the good old racing line, which I would always recommend. There. No, but that racing line, I'd always recommend anyone who's a new driver to turn off when racing, because you actually learn more about yourself and become a better driver quicker when you don't rely on that line. But some assists are beneficial, like the VR, like the mirror. Some of them maybe not so much, but.
I would actually like it. Okay, so I guess the conversation in here is the scale of assists. You're always going to need some things that compensate for it not being real life. So, for example, you could argue that getting better kit counts as an assist in some way because you're getting more information and more feedback. But we can scale that. It's certainly not black and white. This is an assist or this isn't. So it's a path I want to go down because I want to talk about IRFFB. As well, which is a third-party program. With Racing Line, would you, if I do a vote, a referendum on Racing Line is only available in open, in testing mode, and never for any kind of race or hosted session?
Yeah, I mean, that's when you first start out, if you've never been on a track before, it's good to maybe learn the track after a couple of laps, but even then I would say once you know your way round the track, you know which way the corners go, turn it off, because that's the only way that you get better. Start out slow and then slowly build up your speed. To be honest, the best assist, which I'm always banging on about for me in iRacing, as you said, just to make sure we get that enjoyment, because that's ultimately what we're sim racing for, is auto clutch. I'm a big advocate for it. I'm going to get it put on a t-shirt one day because
use auto
as much as, because too many people spin their wheels up. Not enough people have double clutch paddles either on their wheels.
Yeah.
And even then, at the best of times, people don't put enough practice in and they just take out half the field before the race has even started.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm all about just, look, get off the line. It's quick enough anyway. It's not like you're considerably slower. And then you've got an opportunity to have a nice race.
I remember a big miscommunication. And it was Mark. Sorry, I wasn't going to. I always try to not name people, but then the name pops in my head and then I can't think of anything else. It was Mark who said, we were talking about these things and he goes through a procedure with the clutch and everything. I'm like, oh, that's way too much hassle. I don't do that. So he's like, oh, what do you do? Well, I sit there on the grid and then when it goes red, I pull first gear, nothing else. And then I just press the throttle and go. And maybe it's not the fastest, but it works and it's simple. So he goes and tries it and I see him. He's in front of me in the grid. There's a huge crash in front. It's caused by him. I look on the replay. I'm like, what happened to you at the start? He says, well, I put it in first gear. The whole thing jumped forward. I jumped the start and then someone hit me. So we'd miscommunicated. To me, it was obvious. That you use like an automatic clutch, because I just not really thought about it in the sim. It became, and you know, I guess it is quite a big assist from a sim point of view. I've never used the clutch. Should I be?
It is 100% quicker. Like that, you can't deny that. If you get it right, you do jump off the line and get a good start. But for me personally, the advantage that you gain off the start from that auto clutch, from the manual clutch, just isn't worth it. And even then, I see guys, obviously racing top split, I see guys who are 5K, 6K, and they still don't get the manual clutch start right every single time.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just not worth that risk, because in the day, on average, an F3 race is what, half an hour? So what's the point of potentially ruining your race right from the get-go when you've got half hour racing ahead of you?
Yeah, and unless you're right at the front, I mean, if you're like 10th, where I seem to qualify, 10th to 15th in the carbon fibre zone, that's what I can do. Really, all I want is everyone to get away at the same distance and then roll through turns one and two and then start racing, avoid the people who've spun. But we're not talking about auto clutch in the single seaters just for normal gear changes. Like, it's always just going to be an automatic clutch for that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just, I'm talking about auto-clutch starts. Yeah. I'm not talking about manual shifting or automatic shifting. You should always shift in iRacing. I don't think there's any wheels, even beginner wheels or entry-level wheels like the G29 or Thrustmasters, that don't come with flappy paddles anyway.
Yeah.
So it's, there's essentials like the manual shifting and turning the racing line off. Like that's what you should be doing from the get-go. That's part and parcel of racing. That's that's what we're there for. But there's other things, as you said, like the auto clutch, which does help dramatically.
Yeah, I can stick with that without... I like you, though. I want the immersion, and I want the moral high ground to mock people who use assists that I think you shouldn't use, but then I want the freedom to use the assists that I use without being mocked. So that's the balance that I'm striving for here. One place we've had a big argument in our patron Slack group is over the use of IRFFB, which is a third-party app that gives you extra sensation, extra feeling. I say an argument in our Slack group, it was just me saying it is an assist. And actually, I didn't like it because it felt unnatural around the seat of the pants stuff, which we'll go into. Everybody else said to me, it's not an assist. What do you think?
I agree with everyone else.
Right, this is over. follow Stuffy. No, go on.
I wouldn't say it's an assist. I would say it's an enhancement of the experience. So without going into too much depth, and I must admit, I'm not as knowledgeable as some other people in regards to false feedback. But one of iRacing's biggest criticisms has always been their false feedback.
Tell me why. Tell me why. I heard this. Someone said, go on R Factor and it's much better.
Yeah, it's just a general... what's the right word? When you're on the edge, say on the edge of a cliff, it's very, with iRacing, the limit of being on the tires is very much like it just disappears. You just spin.
Oh, whereas I see.
There's certain situations where you should be able to save the car and control the car. Whereas with iRacing compared to other sims as R Factor 2, it's not. It's partly to do with the tire model and false feedback. It's a combination of the two. As I said, I'm not that knowledgeable on it. I kind of know the basics.
My question would be, is that a deliberate choice, or is it actually iRacing trying to be too realistic with the tires? So we were all thinking of the Formula Renault 2.0 as just this thing where the back end goes wild and we just kept losing the back end. And we ran it for our competitions. We had to run like freezing conditions and then give these setups that were really understeery just to stop the back end going. And then we spoke to someone who'd driven those cars in real life, was also feeling that same effect. But he was like, well, in real life, you would drive that car and you would say, this has got incredible grip. But you would never get anywhere near, as a non-racing driver, to the point where you're actually going to lose that rear end because you just wouldn't push it hard enough. But in the sim, you jump in and you go, woohoo, and start throwing the wheel around and get really close to that grip. So I'm wondering if it's like a choice, or is it something they've got wrong?
Maybe a combination of the two. Obviously, they set out their stall.
Yeah.
They set out their stall to do tire models their own way, that obviously they want to be kind of different to everyone else. As I said, I don't know how they gather their data. Obviously it's kind of real world data that they gather from people, almost like when they do third party scans of tracks and stuff. It's always been a big criticism of theirs. As I said, the false feedback going on to IRFFB, the reason why I said it's an enhancement. So the reason why Assetto Corsa and R Factor 2 has such a great feedback or false feedback in the community, or widely regarded in the community, is because of their output. So there's they output 360 hertz into your wheel, whereas iRacing is only 60. So that's 300 difference. As I said, this is just terminology. I don't know.
No, so it's resolution. So you're getting that information. You're getting more information quicker, I guess, and it's updating quicker. That's quite a big difference.
So what that does, that makes your false feedbacks a lot smoother. Now, obviously, iRacing is still iRacing's false feedback, and all that IIFFB is doing is changing it into 360 hertz when it goes into your steering wheel. Obviously, there's a little bit of a latency, a little bit of a delay effect because of that, because the program's doing all the data changing and outputting it quicker for you to feel. But it's so much better. Once you use IIFFB for a few weeks or even a week and then go back to normal iRacing, you feel how clunky the actual steering is. And that's why I think it's an enhancement, because you feel more and the steering is smoother than it is, because you've got more data going into your steering wheel and through your hands than you have if you're just using iRacing.
So is it worth, I don't know, how does R-Factor work? Is it a game you buy once or is it a...
Yeah, it's just a game you buy on Steam. It's always like...
I think I've got it on Steam. I think I've got it on Steam. Is it worth downloading that just to see what my wheel feels like in R-Factor?
I think so. Yeah, no, I definitely think so. I mean, a bit like iRacing, you can spend a lot of money buying extras like tracks and cars. But just they've got obviously their standard cars. I think they've got a couple of like a standard GTE car or whatever that you can jump into, and you'll be able to feel the difference straight away. It's a shame that it doesn't really kind of have the same online support that iRacing has in regards to like the structure and so forth, because it'd be great competitively to racing. Some of the pro events are on there, but yeah, for it as an experience to just sit back and drive. All right. Different
well, tracks. I've got it. I have it, so I don't even have to buy it. I obviously bought it at some point. I think I bought that and the Assetto Corsa when I was trying out all the sims, and then iRacing the multiplayer and everything. Just straight away, I went, "All right, yeah, no, this is the one." And also, it had the bit of a celebrity factor too. But I will give this a go. So I see what you're saying there about it's going to another app. So there's your latency, and it has to come back to you. But the stream of information is more packed. Therefore, there's more resolution into it, more detail. But it's the seat of the pants feature on there is the one that made me turn it off, actually. And it's sort of to help you catch a slide.
Yeah.
And to me, that felt so unnatural. Basically, as it detects the back end starting to go, and it's better at detecting the back end starting to go than you are in your brain. So at that point, it then puts extra force into the wheel. So you can feel a much more kind of urgent, oh no, something's happening. It's like a spike of resistance that is not linear, is not as the game intended. This is why my argument that it's an assist came from. Because if it detected that you are sliding and then went beep, beep, or slide, or something to tell you to then correct. But, you know, this is a tactile spike. And I don't know, to me, that feels like a warning assist.
Yeah, I think it's actually the opposite. I think it makes the steering go lighter as you start to lose the back end. I think that's the difference, is that you notice the steering go lighter so that you're then able to lift off the throttle to save the back end or adjust your steering. But it's, I get where you're coming from. I mean, I can't comment about driving a real-life race car. Brad Philpott's probably better, much better suited.
Oh, yeah, he's much better than you, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's much better suited to obviously comment on it.
Yeah, but
if,
so in real
when you
life,
lose the rear ends, the car starts to feel lighter. There's certain feelings. It's all about, as driving in real life, as we all know, you drive through your bum. You drive through the G-forces, as you said, you've done karting. You drive through what you're feeling through your whole body.
Yeah.
And obviously in sim racing, we're trying... IIFFB's that seat of the pants effect. It's just trying to give some more feeling for you to detect when you are losing that rear end, for the only thing that you can get response on or feel in the sim, which is through your hands. So it might not necessarily be as true to life, as true an effect as it is in real life, but it's... Yes, it is an assist, but I still think it's an enhancement.
Yeah, he turned around in the end, everyone. He said it's an assist and an enhancement.
Seat of the pants is an assist. So me personally, I don't use the understeer effect that IIFFB provides. Some people do. I don't. I know I know when I'm understeering.
Is that different to the is that different to the seat of the pants? That's a different
So seat of the pants is the rear of the car, whereas understeer is understeer.
What does it do? What does the understeer one do?
Same effect.
It makes it even lighter.
Yeah, it just makes the steering lighter so that you know to lift off the throttle or touch the brakes. Because just cars understeering. But I don't need that. That's my personal choice. And
so someone said, well, if you've got a stiffer wheel, a heavier wheel than me, so that's an assist. And I was like, well, no, it's the inputs the game's giving you. And yes, you've got more resolution with a heavier wheel. So at some point in that, if you push it too far, it'll go. But I think that's very different to, yes, that makes it easier for sure. But I feel like that's very different to a specific spike to tell you a specific point of where you are in the slide. I think like no one would argue if instead of a peak of strength, if instead it made a beep or it made the wheel shake instead, I think we would go, oh, you know, that's definitely an assist.
Yeah. As I said, I totally get where you're coming from. I need to go back to R Factor 2 myself to try out if they have something similar. I'm sure people listening will be able to tell us straight away if they do or not. But it's trying to put stuff in that iRacing's false feedback is missing, basically.
Mm. Okay.
To try and enhance the experience. And even if you're not a fan of the seat of the pants effect, just for the smoothness of the feedback that you receive, especially through the wheel base that you've got, it will... you won't ever want to go back.
All right. I'm going to do the R Factor thing and then I can use the IRFB, but without the seat of the pants assist and without the understeer assist.
They're totally optional.
Okay. Yeah. See how I've doubled down. I'm calling them the assists. So maybe not the whole thing, but it has elements that might be considered assists. Let the arguments continue. I started the show off by saying I took a bit of a dip in my racing this week, and that's because, well, I haven't found another series to get my teeth into. Oh, I'm going to get my I rating up to, say, 4,000 is my next aim. 3,000 at the moment, 3,100, I think.
Wow.
Get in, baby. It's enough to be in the top splits, but I'm vulnerable. So a few bad races in a radical, and I will, you know, I'll be back down into split two and stuff. So at the moment, I'm not doing it. But we were at Zandvoort for the F3. And I'm off pace. Guys, that's frustrating. I mean, I'm off pace anyway. I'm not, like, good. But, for example, at Suzuka and Spa this season, I was able to fight for top fives, top sixes during the day in the top split, which is nice. And then you get to the evening ones, and I could sit there and really compete for a good kind of top seven, top eight. You know what I mean? I felt like I had the pace to fight, even if it didn't go well. Get to the tracks like Donington and Zandvoort, the non-Grand Prix tracks, and I'm always off pace at those tracks, and it's been bugging me. And it couldn't be because I just don't know those tracks as well as I do the other ones from game. I mean, you've been driving Suzuka and Spa on games for forever, so it's no bother. But I think what it comes down to is, like Zandvoort, every corner is potentially going to throw you off. There's no runoff. It's all grass and gravel or a wall. So I think on those tracks, a lot of people just go for it like normal and just accept the risk. They just go for it maximum pace and then they'll eventually crash. Whereas people like me, I'm like, I want to finish a race. Like you said, it's a half hour race. I don't want to waste my time. It's an hour total. I want to race. I want to survive. So I end up just coming off the full push. So maybe I'm only at 95%, which kills my pace. But actually, my I rating's fantastic. I think I did like four races at Zandvoort and I think I gained I rating in all of them because everybody's like going at full pace, much faster than me. They crash out and then I do and I poodle along and get a good finish. But I don't know, but there was no joy in it. No joy in doing that. So I ended up just going, and I haven't touched it since Wednesday.
Yeah, everything you said, totally agree. The reason why you have to take your foot off the gas a little bit is because there is no room for error. Yeah. Brands Hatch is another one as well. And what you see, actually, is you'll see more. I see more crashes not due to people being taking more risks and keeping their foot down and running out of track. I see it because people are probably too cautious. And you've got the people who are confident and they just run into the back of them or just, spin up because they're trying to avoid the people who are taking things extra cautious. Brands Hatch up to Druids first lap is just always absolute carnage. You start from the back of the grid every single time around there.
Yeah. Is Druids just the hairpin to the right hander?
After the right hander, and that's just because people are either too confident, they're very confident on the brakes, and then you've got people in front who are just obviously too risk averse and they're taking extra cautious, and unfortunately there's then that Constantina effect. Also as well, that I find you don't have as good wheel-to-wheel racing around there. As you said, it's good for the eye rating, it's good for the safety rating, but how many races within a week can you properly say that you have good racing? And that's because the field gets thinned out very quickly.
Yeah.
And obviously people are taking it cautious around there and you're not pushing as hard as you can.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So I tend to, I'm not like cautious, but I find my safe pace where I go, right, I'm going to lap, I'm going to compete around here. Whereas when there's places like Spa and Suzuka and actually Sebring's the next one for this week, you go, okay, a little off might cost me not time, it might not be the fastest way to go, but it's not going to cost me the race. So I'm more than happy to really push and get into it and get into a rhythm. Couldn't get into a rhythm around Zandvoort at all because there's death. there's death around potentially around every corner.
Yeah, exactly that. And especially that last corner, Zandvoort. It's a quick one, but the outside edge, it catches you. If you go on it, it just sucks your car in like glue or like a train track, and then you end up in the gravel, and 9 times out of 10 you end up in the barrier and your race is over and done with. So as I said, it's a very fine line between you find your comfortable pace, and then you obviously the racer in us wants to go faster. And as soon as we try and go that extra bit quicker, it's so easy for you just to in it and make a mistake and your race is over.
And I wonder if it's I'm gonna be going to old man mode, but like as a dad, as a freelancer, you guard your time a little bit more jealously, and you're like, do you know what? I got through qualifying, I've got through practice, I've put my pace in, I'm 8 laps in, I'm not binning it now. And so you're a bit more cautious. And I wonder if, there's a lot of win or bin kids on there. Is it the kids these days with their win or bin? But anyway, I'm looking forward to Sebring. It's not a track that I've generally gotten on with, but it is a track you can push. There's only a few corners of death. Probably turn one likes to suck you into that right-hand wall.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, Sebring. It doesn't suit F3 cars at all.
You don't think?
In real life, they wouldn't go around there. It's too bumpy. And you do feel it in the F3 car as well, in iRacing. You have to stay away from the curbs because obviously they're considerably raised. GT cars, you can glide over them, but not in the F3 car. So be careful, guys.
Is there a stuffy F3 Sebring guide?
I'm planning on doing one. I would like to put one out at the start of this week, but unfortunately, I'm very busy with personal things. So I'll hopefully try and get one out a little bit later on this week. If not, definitely the week after.
But I need it now for our Swarm Cup. All right, give me some general survival tips around Sebring. So stay off the curbs, all the curbs.
Stay off all the curbs, apart from the hairpin, because it's flat, which is... I can't remember what it's called. It's like second sector.
Hairpin? Oh, the really tight one at the end of the straight?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you can get on the curb there. There's a couple of... That's why I should do a track guide, really. Yeah. As I said, it's very bumpy, and there's a few areas on the track that you need to be careful of, if memory serves me right, just with bumps in the middle of the track.
Yeah.
So I think the first sector is you're going... round kind of the long left hander just before the straight, there's like I think it's right in the middle. There's a big bump that can really throw the car off. As I say, it's just really bumpy. Just run a couple of laps, find out where those bumps are,
try to avoid them.
And you have to avoid them, because although maybe going it's not on the racing line, that does in an essence become the racing line. Take avoiding that bump, like Monaco in an essence, it's quicker to avoid that little bump than it is to go over.
Oh, good. So I've driven myself mad, I think, around that corner before, because I think I'm taking what's a good line, and then all of a sudden it's unsettled, and that'll be like a little bump or something.
Yeah. And Sebring is known for it. So.
And the last turn or turns is super interesting as well, because you come down the long back straight and then, apologies for anyone who doesn't know Sebring, but you end up kind of, it's almost like a hairpin, but it goes on forever and you end up kind of going at full throttle, almost 2/3 of the way around a really long hairpin, and then you get on the brakes, but the car is not in any kind of mood at all to be put on the brakes. And then the point at which you're meant to accelerate is magic. And I don't think I've ever been comfortable at the end of that lap.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the corner. I don't like it. Never have done in any corner. And it's very bumpy as well around there. If you try and keep it too tight to the wall, there's a big, massive bump.
On the inside, yes.
Yes. So you think it's actually the racing line, but it's not. Yeah. And that, I've experienced that, where it throws your car completely off. So be careful with that one, guys. But it's, it's a difficult one. But you can really, those two corners, the last corner and the first corner, you really can just throw it in there. Once you get into a bit of a rhythm, it's really enjoyable. And just little tip, guys, anyone who's listening, always adjust your brake bias. Because it could be too far forward and you could lock up.
I'm finding that on every track, because we're doing the Fix series at the moment. I'm finding every track that iRacing set their set one, the brake bias is too forward by default, nearly every single one.
Yeah, I think it's 55 standard, which is just too far forward.
Yeah, so some of them we've been cranking them right back. But basically, unless you're just stepping on the brakes for every corner, like, it doesn't allow for any trail braking at all.
No, I think you should only have the brake bias that far forward in very hard braking zones, like at the end of a very long high speed straight, i.e. Monza. Monza is the one that comes to my mind. Even then, I don't think you have the brake bias that far forward. So yeah, always bring it back a touch. It, of course, it depends on the track that you're at.
Cool. So we're not going mad having done that, because you think, well, they've set it at that for a reason. But they haven't. I guess they've just gone. I guess they've just left it. I don't know. They've just gone.
Even then, I don't know why, because it's the Fix setups generally have been very good this season.
Yeah,
I don't know who iRacing has done them. Rumours were that they got someone from VRS to do them.
Nice.
Julian Dunn, he's a very quick pro sim racing driver. I think he put them together. So they've been very good this season. But of course, the brake bias is the one thing that you can tamper with in Fix series. And that's, definitely always want to bring that back.
So I also use the Fix one in the Open series because I don't want to relearn a new setup. And actually, they've been fine. They've been fine, reasonably competitive. And I think the people who are able to get an advantage out of the opener setups and random ones, or cheat setups, if you like, were going to beat me anyway. So I think it's only a problem if you're at the top end. Spa was the only funny one. There seemed to be some really funny setups there where, like, you know, I'd start off in someone's toe and then they, like, launch. And then suddenly by the end of the straight, how did you get further away? There's, like, a reverse toe.
Yeah, Spa is known for, it seems like, I still don't know it. It's a good thing I probably missed Spa week. But yeah, I think it's something to do with a low rake.
Negative rake.
You still get the same cornering a bit. You don't lose any cornering ability, but you gain top speed. And of course, Spa, you're on full throttle for a lot of the track, a lot of the laps. So yeah, Spa's always a difficult one. If I was fit to race, I would have probably just stuck to the Fix series that week.
Yeah, that's the only one. That's the only one where it's really been a disadvantage. The rest of the time, actually, I've been finding with the Fix setup, there's people like dying left, right and centre in the first few laps while their tyres warm up, because people are going... I think what happens is people experiment with these setups and they look at their lap 10 time and they go, whoa, after 10 laps, I'm like topping the practice session. You go, yeah, that's no good, because you're all over the place in the first three laps. Whereas the iRacing ones are generally, you know, one or two laps and you're golden.
Yeah, exactly. I've really enjoyed the fixed setups. And then that's the thing, going back to like the assists and stuff. To be honest, it doesn't matter what assist you use. If you have fun,
No.
I know, Spanners, but generally speaking, we're here to have good racing. to enjoy ourselves. And if you want to have every single assist on and you get good, you have good racing, then no, so be it.
Only the assists.
I'm not going to judge you, but Span as well.
Yeah, only the assists I use are acceptable somehow. That's the way we see it, isn't it? Especially with video games. Anyone who's worse than you is a noob, and anyone who's better than you has no life and probably plays every day and doesn't do anything else. Okay, good. So there's no track guide from you this week, but there is a lot of good content on your channel. How many Ys do you have in your username?
Two Ys.
So Stuffy with two Ys.
Yeah, it's E-double-Y. It's basically my first initial and last name, but someone already had Stuffy with one Y. I still don't know who that individual is.
Ask iRacing to put Stuffy in your iRacing driver name. Do it. They did it for me and for Catman as well. So give him a hit up and let's get Stuffy on the driver sheet. All right, cool. And you don't do Twitter, do you? You don't.
I do Stuffy as well. But
why aren't we connected? Why aren't we friends on there? It's a diss.
I don't know.
Stuffy on Twitter.
I just follow people on Twitter. I'm not a tweeter.
Look at you there. I see. Yes, it's a very inactive and lazy page. Don't bother following him on Twitter. You can follow the show here at iRacing Podcast or me at Spanners Ready. Until we see you next time, work hard, be kind, have fun, don't use the racing line, get faster. Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.